Welcome to another edition of Blue Republican Radio with me, Robin Kerner, the original Blue Republican. Here we are once again for the non-dogmatic, liberty-curious lovers of the founding principles of our nation. And I'm excited today to talk to another Blue Republican, one of the chapter chairs, a chairwoman, in fact, of Blue Republican Minnesota. Her name is Juliet Nail, and I am talking to her today because I'm very excited. I will be flying to Minnesota at the end of this week to be involved in an event that Juliet is organizing. In fact, it's Blue Republican Minnesota's inaugural event. We could call it that, couldn't we, Juliet?
In fact, I think I have.
Oh, well, there you go then. I'm not just making it up. Excellent. So now let's start by introducing you, Juliet, to kind of the Blue Republican listeners. I'm obviously really looking forward to meeting you because you and I have had lots of conversations as you've kind of taken this project on in your state and started arranging this event, and I loved how you kind of really hit the ground running, and I'm deeply grateful because all of the Blue Republican chapter chairs are, like me, volunteers. No one is yet getting, remunerated except with a, I hope, sense of satisfaction. And we're all doing it because none of us really feel like we have much of a choice, right, if our country isn't going to go down the drain. But I know that people like you put in a lot of effort, and I am very grateful. And you've been one of the most energetic chapter chairs since you joined. So please, why, Juliet, did you come to Blue Republican and agree to be a chapter chair and work up there in Minnesota?
Well, I think you kind of embody, well, the name Blue Republican, obviously, to me, it means getting beyond the partisan divide. But I think it's really bigger than that. And the big thing that I think you bring to this movement that other people really don't and that I want to be part of is the love piece. Mm. You know, liberty is really important, but my favorite piece that you've done is Liberty Without Love is Hollow. Mm. Because it doesn't matter if we're right or wrong, for that matter, if there's no love in it.
Right.
So I think that intent and that intent of bringing down the polarization and listening to people that we may not agree with and trying to address the concerns of the other side. And I think you really bring that to the table. And I think you bring that uniquely to the table in the liberty movement. And that's why I think we all respond, or at least that's why I feel very moved to be part of this.
Well, thank you so much. And I'm delighted because obviously you and I, as I say, we've never met. We spent enough time on the phone to know that we resonate, I think, in this respect. And I appreciate that. You know, I'm certainly not the only one that sees it that way, and you are living proof of that. And one of the most exciting things for me, having got into this movement, found kind of all this meaning in this, is that I get to meet people like you. And there's that, I said, old cliche in a way of like attracts like, I guess. And I've been so blessed. You put love out there and then you start to feel it come back, right? And so you're a part of that for me, and I thank you. So what is the event? Obviously I know, but the listeners don't. So I'm going to invite you to share with the listeners what is the event that you're organizing, and why did you choose it? How did it come to happen?
Sure. So next Sunday's event is...
Oh, okay. I should say... I'm going to interrupt you. This will come out at the weekend, right? This will come out on the 6th and 7th of September. And the event we're talking about is on the 7th in the evening, isn't it?
That's right.
So if you're listening to this, it's either later today if you're listening to it on Sunday or tomorrow if you're listening to it on Saturday.
Right. So it's 6:30 to 9:30 Sunday night, September 7th, Minnesota time. So that's Central Time. And the event is called Does the Constitution Work? Can it work, and for whom? And it really came out of a couple of things. The first being when I agreed to be a chapter leader, pretty quickly after I was talking to a friend about Blue Republican and about what you were doing and kind of work I'd been doing in the liberty movement. And she was really excited about it. And she does a lot of different civic things. So she told me about a grant at the Minnesota Humanities, I think it was the Minnesota Humanities Center or something, that there was a lot, I think there was on PBS last year, a lot of some series on the Constitution, and then the Humanities, Minnesota Humanities group was doing grants to have conversations about the Constitution in different groups. So I don't know if you remember, but I wanted to apply for that grant. But there were complications because we're not a nonprofit, right, et cetera. So I kind of let it go. But when I came back and talked to you, you were still excited about the idea. So somewhere in there, I was like, hey, let's just do it. I don't know. I'm not sure if that was a good or bad thing. It was a good thing. So we just went for it, and it just kind of slowly evolved. I don't remember if it was your idea to add Chris Ann or not. My girlfriend that had been having these conversations with me had mentioned, had talked to me a little bit about her friend Frank Bebo, who is a tribal and constitutional lawyer up in northern Minnesota. And she showed me some videos of work that he had done around the hunting and fishing rights, particularly pertaining to the 1855 treaties in northern Minnesota. So when she was telling me about him, I was like, let's get Frank. Mm-hmm. So she got me in contact with him, and then he agreed, and you got Chris Ann to agree. Well, you got me in contact with Chris Ann.
Sure, yeah.
It was just very exciting. And if I'm remembering right, this year is the 1,000th year anniversary of
constitutionalism.
Yes, or events leading up to.
Yes.
So I remember you, an article that you had written right around that time.
Right.
That kind of made it like, well, we should do it this year, not next year.
Yes, to celebrate the millennium, the exact millennium of, of the beginning of this Anglo tradition. That.
Well, and then then you showed me Chris Ann's work a little bit, and I saw the great work she has done going around the country talking about the Constitution. So to me, it was really exciting to have the kind of the British piece, history, and modern aspect of the Constitution, and then, you know, kind of Chris Ann, the traditional colonial American. And then I vaguely remember something about the Iroquois Confederacy also being an inspiration for the Constitution.
Right.
So hopefully Frank knows a little bit about that. I'm not sure that he does, but I would assume so.
Indeed. And I mean, so what's exciting about this is we're going to be considering the applicability, both theoretically and practically, of the Constitution today, how it affects our politics and perhaps even our culture, but with reference to its origins, to where it come from. So what's coming out of it and what went into it and relating the two.
Yes.
I'm really looking forward to being part of this.
Yeah, so I think it's slightly just a little different than anything I've been involved with.
Yes, yeah. And I got to say, I had the pleasure of being on stage with Chris Ann just a couple of days ago in Spokane, Washington. And, there are many differences between us, but I'm not sure you can put a rice paper between us, actually, on various aspects of the Constitution. And but we come at it from different perspectives, which makes our overlapping understanding even more kind of exciting. I get very energized. And Chris Ann, she's brilliant. I mean, she's just so knowledgeable. So I think you're well set up here. I'm really looking forward to sharing the stage with Chris Ann and with Frank. And I know I'm going to learn a lot. I always learn a lot when I'm, you know, in a room with Chris Ann. And I'm going to learn a whole lot about, I hope Frank can speak to enough of this, the Native American influences on the Constitution. I mean, I'm completely ignorant in this area.
Well, and I'm trying to remember if it was via the Articles of Confederation or a direct influence.
Right.
But there was definitely an influence with the Iroquois, the Iroquois Confederacy specifically.
Now, and we're coming to the close of this segment in about half a minute. But you've been involved also in in certain property rights and environmental issues that also bear on Native Americans in your neck of the woods?
Well, right, and that's how that's where Frank comes in. And a few weeks ago, I was able to go to a hearing that Frank is the lead attorney on with a group called Honor the Earth.
Okay, well, I tell you what, we're going into the break, so we'll talk about that when we come back. Thank you. Welcome back to Blue Republican Radio. I'm here with Juliet Nail, the chairwoman of Blue Republican Minnesota. And Juliet, when we went into the break, you mentioned this organization called Honor the Earth, where I believe you met Frank Bebo, one of the speakers at our event, our upcoming event, for the first time.
Exactly. So I finally got to meet Frank, and so far he's the only one of you three that I've physically met.
Right.
At the event, it was a hearing for the Sandpiper Pipeline in St. Paul. So Honor the Earth is a northern Minnesota environmental organization. Some of the listeners will know of Winona LaDuke, who ran as, I want to say, vice presidential candidate with Ralph Nader on the Green Party ticket. Maybe 2000, I'm not sure what year.
Mm-hmm.
But she's heavily involved. It may have been her that started the group. I'm not 100% sure. But anyway, so I got to meet them at this hearing in St. Paul a few weeks ago. And Blue Republican Minnesota was able to do some interviews, which are on our website.
Which is minnesota.bluerepublican.org.
Yes.
Yes.
And so Michael Dahl and then another attendee were able to do did an interview with me, and that was really interesting.
So what was the organization? What's the organization's purpose, and what was the purpose of the event?
Well, I think that the purpose of Honor the Earth is basically protecting the earth, particularly up in their area. And one thing that's interesting about northern Minnesota is we have three continental divides. So the watershed up in northern Minnesota actually covers one-fifth, or is the headwaters of one-fifth of the world's fresh water.
Wow.
Up in northern Minnesota. So you have the headwaters of the Mississippi and all of that going down.
Mm-hmm.
You have the Red River Valley that empties into, I want to say, Hudson Bay. And then you have the watershed going into Lake Superior. So the Sandpiper Pipeline is a pipeline. Yeah, I'm sure you're aware of the oil boom in North Dakota.
Right.
And it's, I want to say, the Bakken oil shale. So that they want to build Enbridge, it's a Canadian company, wants to build a pipeline from North Dakota across Minnesota and to empty out into, I imagine, the shipping in Lake Superior. So the current pipeline goes across northern Minnesota. Well, you have this very fragile, delicate, extremely important watershed. And then in addition, the tribes up in that area, you have the Leech Lake Reservation, you have White Earth Reservation. There's several reservations.
Mm-hmm.
These folks in their traditional societies, the wild rice is extremely important. So, you know, there's a huge amount of wild rice habitat as well. So this pipeline was going to go across the proposed pipeline. I believe they wanted it to go across reservations, and the tribes don't want it. But it's also across this very delicate watershed, as well as an important food source for these folks. And it's both not just an important food source. You could say, well, you know, eat corn like everybody else, but wild rice is very important in their spiritual traditions as well. There's a, I think the video on the links about Honor the Earth on our website actually talk a little bit about that.
Now, explain this to me, Julia. I'm a bit confused. Just because somebody lays a pipe,
right,
that doesn't mean that you still can't grow whatever you want to grow. Is the fear here that there's some danger of leakage and that that could damage the agriculture with respect to this white rice, this wild rice?
Wild rice, yeah.
Okay.
Well, so there's a couple things. So Enbridge doesn't have a very good track record.
Okay.
They had one within the last several years in northern Michigan. Also, if you look at kind of, I mean, it's not a pipeline, but if you look at the BP spill, just the number of oil spills that have been out there. But the real issue, besides the environmental issue in this particular case, is that the tribes don't want them.
Right.
And in their treaties, so in the 1855 treaty,
mm-hmm,
they gave up land, but they did not give up hunting, fishing, and gathering rights. So this is where Frank Bebo comes in. So Frank has already won several lawsuits over the years on various lakes where, so let's say you and I, if we went to go fishing in Mille Lacs Lake, we have to have a license and we can only get so many fish and only fish at certain times of year, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the tribal members that are under these treaties, they can fish whenever they want because they retain the natural right. So kind of like we say, the Constitution doesn't grant us rights.
Right.
It guarantees the natural rights that we have.
Mm-hmm.
So the 1855 treaty does the same thing. It's not granting hunting,
right,
fishing,
sure,
and gathering,
sure,
rights. It's retaining the rights that they already owned. So kind of the position that I was taking on this pipeline is it really doesn't matter why. If there's any possibility that a pipeline or a road for that matter or anything else is going to impact their ability to hunt, fish, or gather on any of those lands. And in my understanding, it's a huge swath of northern Minnesota that are covered under this treaty. They can just say no.
But
that's my position.
Now, so explain this to me. I don't understand. If the whole point of keeping the natural rights is, but they gave up ownership of the land,
mm-hmm,
isn't the whole point of that somebody can come and use that land for anything as long as they don't seek to remove those natural rights to these natural resources? Do you see what I'm saying? Why does the fact that you can hunt and fish mean that somebody else can't put a pipeline if you don't own the land?
Right. So if the activity that you're doing could damage those rights, so technically they, you know, a lot of people, these tribes have not been asserting those rights the last 100 years or so, right?
Okay.
And have only started reasserting them in the last 20 years at all anyway. So technically, if you build too many houses, that would abridge the rights too, right? Because you can't hunt. So it really any activity, and you have a good point. I think they're thinking that, well, one, all the equipment going in, you know, what it's going to take to build the pipeline, but also just because the ecosystem, this watershed, one-fifth of the world's fresh water, is so fragile, and the wild rice habitat, et cetera, is so fragile, I think the Honor the Earth and the thinking of the tribes is that, you know, one small incident will have a huge amount of damage. And then the other piece of this is a lot of these areas are really, really remote. So you could have a leak, you know, like BP was going and going and going before anyone even notices it. And then by the time you get equipment in to clean it up, you know, there's just a huge amount of damage.
Wouldn't that, though, also be an argument for, you know, saying that nobody should be allowed to build a nuclear power station? Because if something goes wrong, it could impinge on rights that we have. I mean, you can't prevent something from doing, you know, you have to assume they're not going to be criminally negligent in determining whether they should be allowed to act, right?
Right. So in my, so you have to remember this is different than other things because there's a specific treaty covering this. But I would argue, I would imagine if they, anything that folks want to build in the area covered by the 1855 treaty, they should have the right to say no. I mean, that's my take on it.
That sounds like property ownership to me, to have the right to say no for somebody to do something somewhere. Isn't that what owning property is?
Well, I see your point, but what if they decided to build, I don't know, a wind turbine or a solar panel?
Well, this is a very good question, and I'm noticing on my screen here that we're coming into a break. But
okay.
this is very interesting. Thanks, Juliet. We will carry on when we come back in a few minutes. Back to Blue Republican Radio, and I'm having quite an interesting banter about property rights with the chairwoman of Blue Republican Minnesota. So Juliet, just kind of standing back a little bit, why did you go to this issue? How did you get to this event? Why did you choose this after you became Blue Republican chairwoman up there in Minnesota?
Sure. Well, if I'm most honest, is we had picked Frank to be in this event, and I knew he was going to be at the event, so I wanted to go check it out. And also, I kind of obviously read and listened to a little bit of work he had done. But what was interesting is when I got there, I saw this connection to what I believed were libertarian themes or constitutional themes, yada yada yada. And you bring up really good issues around property rights, and I don't have all the answers, but what I think it's important, we have these great ideas in libertarianism and the liberty movement, but we have to apply them to real life.
Right.
And so there I was, and people are telling me the issues, so I want to apply the theory that I've learned, and also, then these guys are talking about what they're doing. It makes sense to me that they want to protect their rice fields and whatever. So that's kind of why I picked it, because it was there, but also because I feel like we have to pick issues and apply these theories to the issues in front of us.
You know, that is interesting in a broader sense, because you mentioned at the beginning of the show that what in some way sets Blue Republican apart, I hope, is not that we're about liberty. There are loads of organizations actually now, and thank God increasing numbers of them, that really care about liberty, but that we're about liberty with love. And it's the with love piece that really speaks to the application, right? It's because sometimes, you don't, it's that old, what's that Yogi Berra quote? In theory, there's no difference between theory and practice. In practice, there is. Right.
Right.
And it's sometimes when you actually start to try and apply the principles and you see how they impact people's lives and people's feelings or whatever in ways that you couldn't have predicted that weren't there in your theory, then where do you go? Well, the only place you can kind of go to is that question, well, what would love do now?
Right. And what and obviously you're going to be influenced by your own prejudices. So.
Right. And your own principles, quite rightly influenced by your own convictions. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that necessarily.
Right. So not necessarily prejudices, but principles, ideas, maybe prejudices.
Sure.
They're all going to come into it. So what I thought was interesting about this, and I loved your questions, because it, because I've thought about that before, but nobody really, I haven't wrestled with that. And so that would be kind of fun to talk with Frank about a little bit, is where does that line end? If they retain hunting, fishing, and gathering rights, but yet someone else owns the property rights, you know, that kind of has to be renegotiated, because for 100 years, those rights weren't asserted by the trust, by the people who retained them. So now they get to assert that. And I would love, that would be a great question for Frank or Michael Dahl or Winona LaDuke. You know, I suspect if someone had, you know, projects, well, I guess it would depend on the project, because even with wind power or solar, sometimes there's some really big environmental impact.
Right.
So, yeah, and it has to, but it for this treaty, I would think it has to go back to hunting, gathering, and fishing rights. So,
right. And in the broader, and again, just to, I mean, maybe it's obvious, maybe it isn't, but there's an interesting and important thing that you can do kind of as a liberty person, as a blue Republican person, in trying to educate the importance of property rights in general as the basis for the preservation of the environment, right, as opposed to getting the EPA. You know, we should respect property rights, because all over the world, in many different situations, the respect for property rights has been the best protection of the environment that anybody's been able to come up with.
Right. So this is what was really interesting when I got there. So when we got there, so I went along with the U.S. Senate candidate for the Libertarian Party, a woman named Heather Johnson, and she actually testified quite eloquently. And kind of what she testified to was the crux of it, that two things weren't happening. One, we have to, as libertarians, and we believe as, you know, citizens of Minnesota, the treaty rights must be respected, period. Now,
yes.
It sounds like there's some ability to negotiate where that line is. But then secondly, you have the issue of eminent domain. So what was interesting is Friends of the Headwaters, and then there were also some, like, resort owners and things. All these other groups were starting to come to Honor the Earth and to work together, because they kind of saw the work that Frank and Honor the Earth was doing. And they didn't want the pipeline going through northern Minnesota either.
Mm.
So they got together. So some of those have to do with eminent domain. And eminent domain, it should be an important issue to people who care about liberty and the Constitution, because why should the government have the ability to come in, take your land for pennies on the dollar, and give it to a corporation or whoever, and in this case, a foreign corporation? It's not even American corporation,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I believe if your project is important enough, then you should pay and be able to convince the property owners that it's that important, and that you're going to pay them that much.
Okay, but what about the obvious problem that if you have to run a road through 100 fields and you get consent of 99, then the last one is, you know, the last guy who holds out can basically demand any price he wants and thereby prevent the road from happening?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think you have to wait. You bring up a good point that he can command a price, or she, that the other ones didn't. But I don't think you can. The government should be able to ever use force.
So once the whole country is covered with, but people who own small patches of private land, how does it become practicable to do large scale projects at that point? Especially if you're keeping things in the hand of private companies and keeping them out of the state's hands.
Right. I mean, I think that's where the idea of consensus and unity comes in. I mean, you have to really – I mean, it's kind of like what we're doing in the Liberty Movement. If our ideas are so great, we should be able to sell them. So,
well, I might agree with your ideas, but if I can get $1 million for this 3 square foot of land, I'm going to hold out for it. Right?
Yeah,
I mean,
but – there's the other piece of that, though, I wonder. So let's say I do that. So you get your $3 million. Well, everybody's going to be pretty resentful, right? around you. Now, maybe you don't care and you're just going to go off and move to the Bahamas or something. Although, isn't there something in kind of libertarian property rights that there shouldn't be a ton of absentee property rights?
Well, maybe not absentee. Maybe it's then at the end of my garden.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good point. How would you deal with that consensus? Because it so I don't know if you know this, but I'm a practicing Quaker.
I do know that. Yes. Yeah.
So it can take a really long time to come to consensus sometimes.
Right.
Usually what happens, though, is you come up with an alternative that everyone can agree with. So, for instance, in the case of the Sandpiper, mm-hmm. So the Friends of the Headwaters group, they actually came up with several citizens' alternative routes. Several of them went along basically lands that the state already owns eminent domain. So whether it's another gas line or along a highway easement.
Right.
So, and I personally really like the highway one because it's, if you have a leak or whatever, you have easy access.
Yes.
So point is an alternative, they have offered some alternative routes. It would cause problems for Enbridge in that, I'm not 100% sure it goes all the way to I think they did come up with a line all the way back up to Superior. It's much longer. It's a much longer route.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they did come up with some alternatives. And you're right. Absolutely. It's not easy to do. But I don't believe that the easiest way is always the best way, right?
No, but you don't have to believe that to say that at a certain point, you know, there is a theoretical versus practical reasonableness trade. Because if it takes 100 years to get consensus on something, and you know, it may be that the detrimental impact of the time lost, the time you don't have that thing,
right?
By virtue of, let us say, a little bit of force, right? Let's say, you know, that some might even say force in pursuit of life and liberty and the ability of individuals to pursue happiness, even though others would disagree, that it isn't worth it. You know, that it's not, that you can be too pure about the theory, about, you know, how you define aggression, how you refuse to aggress. I mean, I don't know, I'm not arguing that, but this whole conversation to me is interesting because I think it speaks to, like, one of the most fundamental questions that libertarians kind of as a movement need to answer, you know, and certainly when they discuss among themselves between the classical liberals and, you know, the libertarians and the ANCAPs and, you know what I mean, the voluntarists, right? You come up against this in some version all the time.
Well, I think the first thing is, so just to use your example, is you have to go, so all the other landowners, for instance, that gave up their rights, they need to go to this guy and talk to him, right, and listen. Well, are you not giving it up because you just want $3 million, or are you not giving it up because your grandmother is buried under there or something? Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, and kind of working out.
Well, you know, that's really interesting because you asked that question, I guess, because it's better to not give it up if your grandmother's buried under there. But then what if all these millions of Americans who might benefit from whatever this project is hugely, right, i.e. the grandmothers who aren't dead yet, right? Should somebody's sentiment about their dead grandmother, you know, be Trump, you know? I mean, let's assume the case can be made for a public good here. I mean, whichever way you shift the question, you're still basically left with the same question.
It is the same question. So you know that ideologically, I am absolutely a voluntarist. Partially, it was my faith that brought me there. Mm. Now, obviously, I'm working with Blue Republican. I'm doing other things. So in practice, obviously, I'm okay with engaging the current system, engaging parts of it.
Because you probably can't walk out the front door without doing that, can you? I mean,
right.
you can't drink water out of the faucet.
Exactly.
Right.
And I'm a pragmatist. So the big question, I remember someone telling me last year is, Well, you'll vote when I first kind of came around to the voluntarist idea, and that, that aggression, you know, it, government is aggression, basically. Oh, you'll vote one more time, and then you won't vote again. Well, I will probably vote again. I've even been an election judge. Uh-huh. But I will not vote again the lesser of two evils.
Right,
I will
right.
not vote in a race that I don't feel utterly strongly about.
Okay, yes, yeah.
And so I will weigh everyone, where in the past I would have weighed everyone and kind of voted the least best choice amongst the choices.
Yeah, yeah.
I very rarely voted the top two.
Sure.
So now I would say my default is not voting, but if I'm really compelled, I'll vote, which there will be a race every time that I'm compelled.
Yeah, you know, that's interesting that you raise this, because I sometimes think that people that, especially, you know, are people who kind of feel like we do, the pro-liberty crowd, especially the fervent ones, mistake the lesser of two evils for actually maybe a lesser evil versus a lesser good. Right, in the sense that if something is moving in the more in the right direction than in the wrong direction, then it may not be the good that you want, but it's not a lesser evil, it's just only a very small bit of good. But that's fundamentally different from moving away from the right direction. Do you know what I mean? It's like if there's a destination in front of you and a destination behind you, as long as you are walking less than 90 degrees away from the line in front of you, you're actually going towards where you want to go. Right? It may not be very much towards where you want to go, but it's not walking backwards. And,
right.
And I think in a way this kind of captures the difference between, you know, what I like to say, the difference between principle and purism, you know. Sometimes you can maintain firm convictions and principles, even absolute as principles, whilst recognizing that we exist in a world where right now we can't get to them practically in one go.
Right, and I think so I've been thinking about this a lot, and kind of back to the consensus and unity thing, I think consensus and unity decision-making does work in many realms.
Yes.
It's not easy. And you have to do kind of what we talked about in the break, where we talked about things aren't black and white, they're gray, and I kind of argued a little bit that they are black and white if you ramp up the resolution and get into the weeds and look at the details, you can break them down to, you know, a binary decision, but you have to get into the details to do that. And if we don't have enough information, it's gray, essentially, until you can get that resolution.
I've got to say, I do love that. I do love the idea that, you know, when you get into the details, you can actually then sometimes apply principles at the fine-grained scale that you can't at the macro scale. And it only looks gray because you haven't kind of got down into the weeds. I think there's a lot of wisdom in that. Now, we're going into the final break, and we will be back in a few minutes. Thank you, Julia.
Sure.
Here we are at the end of another Blue Republican Radio Hour. And Juliet, you said some really exciting and interesting things in the break, which, of course, the listeners didn't hear. But I know we only have 2.5 minutes, but they were, I think they were really important and really great. And I just want to invite you to take these last 2 minutes now to share your thoughts, your approach to politics broadly with the listeners.
Well, first of all, thank you, Robin, for having me do the interview and coming to my event and letting me be part of Blue Republican. It's really a huge, huge, exciting opportunity. So thank you.
Thank you.
And the vehicle, so what I see as so exciting is through the Liberty Movement and everything that I've been doing, I have come to the place that I believe aggression is wrong and government is aggression.
Mm-hmm.
So I have this ideal, but in today's world, we're not there yet. So I feel like Blue Republican, and what I want Blue Republican Minnesota to do is to work in that direction, to create the conditions that your guy at the end of the 100-mile or 1,000-mile road that mm-hmm. doesn't want to sell because his grandmother's grave is there, or even if it's because he's just being greedy, so that there is a mechanism, a consensus mechanism that doesn't involve force.
Mm.
Just using that as an example in the weeds.
Sure.
You know, I want to create that. And so I see Blue Republican Minnesota focusing on events that create that world, whether it's this Constitution event trying to bring people from the left and the right together, or whether it's lobbying our state legislature to truly legalize marijuana instead of what passed last year, and freeing people up in their daily lives. Or we have this horrible thing here. Last year, they're unionizing independent home care workers. These are small business women. They don't need a union. You know, unionize the kinder care workers that are making minimum wage, right?
Mm.
So we could lobby. We could do beer crawls with education events. Anyway, I'm just really excited at the possibilities, and I want to focus on energizing people and empowering people to come up with events and ideas that will help us create a world that doesn't involve force.
And that's the last word, and what a perfect last word. Thank you so much, Juliet.
Oh, you have a hard job.